Have you ever wondered why some banks offer promotional savings rates that come crashing down after a few months? You deserve better. And when you bank with Capital One, that's exactly what you'll get. With a Capital One savings account, you'll get one of the nation's best rates that's not a promotional rate. Plus, you can open an account online in just 5 minutes. Welcome to Banking Reimagined. What's in your wallet?
For consumers only. Offered by Capital One N.A. member FDIC. Copyright 2017 Capital One.
Hello and welcome to this edition of the Back Nine Report. Carlos seems to be a little bit late getting in, so let's go ahead and start. Hey, what a weekend of golf last weekend. Here in Toledo, we had the Toledo Golf Show, which was a rousing success. It was great to see a lot of friends visit the show and take advantage of the great equipment and travel deals available. There was a line all weekend at the door, and the aisles were full of golfers ready to get their season started here in the Great White North. We want to give our listeners a chance to win a dream trip to Alabama this summer. The trip starts out with tickets to the final round of U.S. Women's Open at Shoal Creek near Birmingham, Alabama, on Sunday, June 3rd. On Monday, play 18 holes at Farm Links, head south to Mobile, spend the night at the historic Battle House, and play Robert Trent Jones Golf Trails Magnolia Grove on Tuesday. After your round at Magnolia Grove, head around to the east side of Mobile Bay to the Marriott Grand Hotel and play the Robert Trent Jones Lakewood Golf Club on Wednesday. Spend that night in Gulf Shores, play Kiva Dunes and the Peninsula Club on Thursday, and then Craft Farms on Friday before heading home. To sign up to win, simply visit this website, roadtripgiveaway.com. That's roadtripgiveaway.com, or visit Ohio Golf Journal. The link is also in there in the February edition, and you can find it at ohiogolfjournal.com. This is a great golf adventure. I've personally played all of these courses except for Farm Links, and I can attest you will not be disappointed with any of them. Carlos, did you just come in?
I am just disappointed at one thing, Frank. I'm disappointed at one thing. Do you know what it is?
No.
Oh, no? Then I cannot
I know you cannot participate. I can barely hear you, though, Carlos. You're coming in very, very faint. So.
Okay, we'll try to.
You cannot participate. You're right. We're not going to let you do that. But it is open to any of the listeners. They can find it at Ohio Golf Journal, the roadtripgiveaway.com. This is the website. Visit that link and get in there. Carlos, I'll let you take over here.
Well, welcome, everybody. Thank you. Sorry for this initial technical difficulties that we've had. Hey, we are here for you now. And like you said, I mean, we have everything, a lot to talk about. We have the weekend packs. We have our special guest, Jack Barrett, is going to be with us. But, as usual, we start with the weekend packs for every week. Fred and I pick a topic, and each of us, we can back to each of us pick one of the major tournaments and talk about it. But this weekend, there was a tournament where a big cat was playing, and it was all about him at the beginning, but then it wasn't anything about him. What happened at the Genesis Open?
Well, Tiger missed the cut on Friday, but tournament organizers decided to play the final two rounds anyway. You know, even though Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, and a few other big names were around for the weekend, but Bubba Watson came out on top. You remember Bubba has a couple green jackets at home in the closet. Well, Bubba won his first PGA Tour event since Riviera in 2016. He had a woeful 2017 with an eating disorder that left him 20 pounds lighter, and he's not that heavy to begin with, and sapped his energy levels. His wife had some health issues, and Bubba admits now that his head was not in the right place. During his press conference after his win on Sunday, he gave a lot of credit to his caddy, management team, and his wife for kicking him in the butt and getting his mind right to get back to competing on tour. Bubba had, you know, wives can do that, Carlos. I don't know if you've had the experience, but, you know, wives have a way of kind of getting your mind right. Bubba had exceeded his expectations by a mile. 9 tour wins previously. 2 of those were Masters green jackets. Plus, he won a WGC event. But he was lost and wondering why he was even playing golf last year. You know, Bubba is not your average mental case, and his mind was not in a good place. He's the perfect example of a guy with as much talent as anyone that has ever swung a golf club. But if you're not in the proper mental place, you cannot perform at a high enough level to compete on the PGA Tour, even if you have more physical ability than anybody. You've got to have your mind right. Another guy who's having similar issues was Graham McDowell. He struggled for the past couple of years, and his overall attitude was not good. But GMAC had a great week until he posted a 77 on Sunday, dropped him down to T26. His 69, 66, 70 in the first three rounds had him in third place heading into the final round. GMAC said, yes, it's been a disappointing 3 or 4 years, but when you boil it down to the fact, if the worst-case scenario happens and you accept it and get out of my own way, that is the X factor, believing in myself. No one can give you a manic pill. It's having a great attitude, which is the 15th club in my bag. So even though Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy are not quite ready to get back to the winner's circle, G-Mac and Bubba have a new mental attitude this year that are making them contenders once again. Speaking of Rory, he was able to piece together 3 good rounds on Riviera, but a third round 73 moved him well down the leaderboard, but a 68 on Sunday moved him up 22 spots to finish T20 in his first start in the U.S. this season. He averaged 309 yards off the tee, but only hit 58% of greens in regulation. His putting stats were woeful through the first three rounds. Finally recorded a 1.496 strokes gained putting on Sunday. Maybe he found something that will help him in Florida this week. Bubba was back to hitting his magnificent fades and draws, was able to pull off approach shots that most golfers can only dream of. He held a 54-hole lead, and his 2-under par 69 on Sunday was good enough for the win by 2 shots over Tony Finau and Kevin Na. Finau could be a guy to keep a close eye on, Carlos. He's consistently showing up on leaderboards and could be on the verge of breaking on a tear. Patrick Cantlay continued his good stretch of play with a T4, tied with Scott Stallings. Cantlay does look a bit awkward at times on the tee. Not sure if he has continuing problems with his back or what's going on, but he gets into some funky positions at the end of his swings. Phil Mickelson continued his good run of play with a T6. Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas both finished T9 with Xander Schauffele, Ryan Moore, and Martin Laird. Dustin Johnson was inside the top 10 heading into the final round on Sunday, but an untidy round, which included 2 double bogeys, dropped him down to T16. Carlos, we're seeing a lot of the big names having trouble on Sundays in the final rounds. I don't know what's going on with that, but, you know, we've been seeing that a lot the last couple of weeks. Our guys just kind of, you know, they're just not, you know, concentrating. If they're not right there to win, they're just not concentrating. And, you know, it's not a big event. You know, the WGCs and the majors are coming. So I'm not sure what's going on there, but we're seeing a lot of guys move down the leaderboard on Sundays when they should be going the other way.
Totally agree, and that's the case. We haven't been seeing them post 4 good rounds in a row, and specifically, like John Ram, it has happened to him like 3 times already this year. So that's when all these other players have come and taken over on the final day. But to see Bubba again win, and more than anything, it's like what he was saying, his mind apparently is in its right place now. We have to see how long does that last. Because like you said, he's not your usual head case. So, yeah, he's maybe the most in creating shots. I don't think there's anybody better than Bubba in golf right now. I have never seen him. I mean, those shots that he can imagine and then he plays them the way that he does, only Bubba can do it. So that's why I agree with your assessment that he has so much potential and never lived up to it. And that's the perfect case, a perfect example of why you have to have the right mind to be good at golf. It's not only about having all the ability. You have to really believe it. So it's good to see him there winning a game. Now let's see if that, you know, he starts climbing back. That this win moved him to 41st in the official world golf ranking. So he will be playing in the WGC Mexico Championship next week. So we'll see. We'll see what happens if he can peak. And he has won twice already in Masters. That's something that seems to be on his radar in April. So we'll see how he does then. But, Fred, one thing that I have here for you regarding the Genesis Open, and I know this is a subject that for you is a little odd. You don't like it too much. But Rory McIlroy, you know that he played with Tiger Woods last week for the first 2 days at Riviera. So he got to witness the full Tiger mania with a front row seat. It's usually him who gets all the attention from the fans. I mean, you saw him at Royal Birthday last year, and there wasn't a two-minute spell without someone shouting, "Let's go, Rory! Let's go!" But for once, he was in the main attraction, and he told the media after his second round at Riviera that all of the attention on Woods is not good for his game. I'm going to quote to you what he said. He said, "It might have been like this, the whole Tiger mania and this dude." He said, referring to someone who shouted, "Let's go, Rory," right on the cue. He said, "I saw a plane in front of all that. He gives up half a shot a day on the field. It's two shots a tournament he has to give to the field because of all that goes on. So whether that comes down or more, the more he plays, and it doesn't become such a novelty that he's back out playing again, it's just tiring, and I need a couple Advil. I've got a headache after all that." And I'm going to leave it there. He said a lot of other things regarding that, but he really took off on the fans because of the way that they are following Tiger and talking to him. Another person that also took it on the crowd was world number four, Justin Thomas, who criticized the PGA Tour fans and their rowdy behavior. You know, it's a common conception that there in Europe, the fans are generally well-mannered and quiet, while PGA Tour fans across the pond can get rather rowdy. So there was some, you remember, some poor behavior from fans and the Hazel team last year, 2 years ago. But during the Genesis Open, he also got into the fans' bad behavior, got a little out of hand, like he said. It was pretty wild for the first couple of days. It was all right a little bit today, but there, at the end, it got a little out of hand. So, Fred, is he overreacting, or do you think that small minorities of American crowds are getting out of hand, or do you really see no harm, no foul in that idea that they have?
Well, I'm going to blame a little bit on this. You know, we just came away from the Waste Management Phoenix Open, so I might blame a little bit of that on that, because that is such a rowdy crowd and such a party atmosphere. I think there might be a little bit of a hangover left from that. Normally, L.A. is pretty laid back and pretty quiet. That's not usually a problem. You know, crowd noise or crowds yelling, usually it's not a big problem out there in L.A. because they're usually pretty quiet. It's a pretty sophisticated crowd out there. So I don't know. You know, Rory, I mean, that sounds like a lot of crying to me, to be quite honest with you. He ought to be tickled to death that Tiger Woods is back, maybe taking a little bit of pressure and heat off of him. Also, Tiger's bringing a lot of eyeballs to the tour, and that's a good thing when the tours are looking at negotiating television contracts right now. So I don't know. If I were Rory, I think I would maybe keep my mouth shut a little bit, because I don't think he's really helping his cause there. It sounds kind of like sour grapes to me. And, Carlos, I'm getting a lot of background noise in my headset, and also you are really soft when you're talking. There's a lot of noise around when you're talking, so I just thought I'd let you know.
Okay, I'm trying to get that fixed, but we'll see how we're going to deal with it. Okay, let's go quickly to the ISPS Handa Australian Women's Open, where I called it, I've been saying it, I mean, I say who's going to be the rookie of the year, and they just come out. They do it. I mean, it's just the way it is. It's a fact of life.
She's not really a rookie, though. She's not a rookie. She's already won a bunch of times.
It's just like Sonya Park last year. She wasn't a rookie, yeah. But hey, that's the rules. That's the rules. So South Korean young gun, Lee Young-ko, has already ticketed off one of her major goals for her debut LPGA Tour season after a brilliant three-shot triumph in the Women's Australian Open at Kooyunga in Sunday. The 22-year-old listed two major ambitions on her wish list for this year: winning her first tournament as a member of the world's most prestigious women's golf tour and claiming the Rookie of the Year crown. One down, and hey, Mark, the second one is down to it. It's going to happen. I already predicted it. So you all know my record, bank on it. It's down. She's going to have 2-14. Cole became the second player to win her LPGA Tour debut as a member. The other one was Beverly Hansen in 1951, so nobody else has done that. She held her nerve for a 3-under 69 and 14-under total to secure victory by three shots from another South Korean, Lee Young Choi, and be the first player in 66 years to win her first event as an LPGA Tour card holder. She took a first-round lead at the Kooyunga Golf Club and never relinquished. She started the final round with a four-shot buffer from Perth star Hannah Green, who couldn't make inroads despite shooting 3-under. Green, entering just her second season as a pro and destined for big things on the fairways, was a stroke further back in third. Fellow Australian Catherine Kirk fired the final round's leading score 7-under par to jump into fourth. And so, claiming a tournament win after leading from the first day in such a lead company is an imposing challenge, and Cole's class and composure shown on the final day to achieve the feat in an impressive fashion. She led by only 2 strokes after 12 holes, and the title was still there to be secured. Haiyin was making her move, and Green was lurking if she faltered, but she held a terrific putt on the 13th for Verde to regain a telling advantage. Her aim was to keep hitting the middle of the green, and that ploy was no more evident than on the 17th with her outstanding approach after her buffer had again been reduced to 2 strokes and work still needed to be done. The testing 18-foot putt finished at the bottom of the top for Verde, allowing her a moment of relief knowing the title was all but hers and a chance to celebrate them with a victory lap down the 18th hole. Hannah Green, she has made an outstanding start to her LPGA Tour career, back up her 11th place finisher on the opener there in the Bahamas. So she's really another one that is the real deal. Kirk also back 5 birdies on the front line, including 4 in succession from the third before adding 3 birdies in the final 4 holes. Her feet become, as the local Stephanie Nat landed a hole in one there when she did the par 3 third hole, the second hole in one for the tournament. But unlike the Swede Jenny Hagelin, Nat won't win Elixir card as the reward wasn't an offer on the third hole. Hagelin on Saturday had aced a par 3 14, which winning a Luxury Genesis card in the process. Now finished the tournament at 3-under, while Australia's top-ranked golfer, world number 17, Min Jae Lee, ended at 8-under in a tie for 5th with American Marina Alex. Arya Yutanagan, So-Yeon Ryu, Charlie Hall, GJ Shim, Sung Jin-Yu, and Emma Talley finished T7 to round up the top 10. Other notable finishers, Christy Kerr and Georgia Hall, T13, Lydia Ko, T19, Madeline Saxon, T30, Dame Laura Davis still hanging in and playing with the young guns. Jody Iwas-Chatham and Haruna Muda were T40. Gotta mention her, Maria Torres from Puerto Rico. She did a T57. She's still playing good, but she's just having one bad round for a tournament. And Angel Jean, T78, and Fred, among the ones that missed the cut, were Brooke Henderson, Kerry Webb, Aditi Ashok, and Morgan Preston.
Yeah, you had a pretty good field down there, as you mentioned. Catherine Kirk fired the low round 65.
Low round 65.
Minji Lee was coming off the win last week in Australia. Charlie Hall, Arian Maria Jutanagarn, Emma Talley, So Young Yu, Georgia Hall, who's another Rookie of the Year contender. She might give your girl there a run. And then, of course, Lydia Ko. They all had top 20 finishes. So a pretty good field there for the Australian Women's Open. Hey, Carlos, the Champions Tour was in Naples, one of my favorite places. I was right by that golf course a couple weeks ago. Joe Durant went low on the weekend to win the Chubb Classic in Naples. Durant followed up a 9-under par 63 on Saturday with a 5-under par 67 on Sunday to take a four-stroke victory over Steve Stricker, David Toms, Lee Jansen, Billy Mather, and Tim Petrovic. Boy, Carlos, in these 54-hole tournaments on the Champions Tour, I mean, you got to just be throwing darts. You got to be making birdies on every hole on Saturday and Sunday, man. It's like a sprint. There is no waiting around on that. You can't have a bad round, or you're down at the bottom of the field. Stricker caught Durant with two holes left, but fell a stroke back when Durant birdied the par 5 17th. And on the par 4 18th, Stricker hit it into the water and made double for a three-shot swing. The 53-year-old Durant closed with a 15-footer to finish at 19-under at Twin Eagles Talon course. He was safely on the 18th green when Stricker, needing a birdie to tie, hit it into the water. It's one of those situations where I was fortunate that I hit first, knocked it onto the green, and then so it really put the pressure on Stricker, and he wasn't able to pull it off. Durant earned $240,000 for third victory on the 50 and over tour. For Stricker, he shot a 70, and he made his first start of the year on the Champions Tour after playing six tournaments last year. The runner-up finishing in his debut, that's not bad. Stricker could win a lot. Stricker could take over Bernhard Langer's domination of the Champions Tour, I will tell you right now, if he played all the time. But he's still competitive on the regular tour, so he plays a lot of regular tour events. Stricker said the par fives killed him. He eagled the first one, was in a great position, and just walked away with pars on the rest of them. So that was really a big difference. Mayfair and Petrovic both shot 64. Tom said 65, and Jansen 68. Scotty McCarron was 14-under after a 68 on Sunday. John Daly had a hole-in-one. He used an 8-iron on the 16th for the ace. First-round leader Miguel Angel Jimenez was 9th at 12-under after a 72. What in the world is wrong with Bernhard Langer? Is age beginning to show on the 60-year-old? Has he had enough? Does winning not get his blood flowing? Is it too early in the year? The majors don't start for a few weeks yet. I can't figure out. Langer finished way down the leaderboard after falling 10 spots to T36 on Sunday with an even par 72. You got to go low on the Champions Tour on Sunday, Carlos. You got to throw those birdies on. Hopefully, there's nothing wrong with Langer, and he'll get going as we get nearer to the major events, Carlos.
Yeah, we don't know really what happens to him. He has set the bar so high that now anything that is not a win or maybe a top five is just a disappointment from him. But I'm going to mention just one person, and you mentioned Steve Stricker. I agree with you. I mean, he can definitely take over. But there's somebody that I've been mentioning lately on the Champions Tour, and he's the Schwab Cup leader right now. We're talking about David Toms. He posted a final round there,
yeah.
5-2. His fifth consecutive top five finish. Okay, he moved to number one in the Charles Schwab Cup standings for the first time in his career. Of course, he's played only two seasons, but hey, he finished the tournament with 15 birdies, 39 pars, and zero bogeys. Zero. This is the 37th bogey-free tournament of at least 54 holes of individual stroke play in the Champions Tour history. It is the 18th time a player has a bogey-free tournament and not won. Duffy Waldo was the last player to finish the tournament bogey-free, and he did so en route to a victory at the Mitsubishi Electric Championship 2 years ago. So take note, David Toms is playing really, really well. And like I said, he hasn't won, but he's playing consistently in the top five. So we'll see. I mean, he by shooting that 7-under 65, he extended his streak to 13 straight rounds in the 60s. He has a chance to match Jerry Kelly's record streak of 16 in 2 weeks when he plays at the Colorado Classic. So let's see. Last year he charted 68, 71, and 7, finished 215. We'll see how he goes with that. But we were David Thoms playing really, really good.
You know, Carlos, David Thoms and Steve Stricker, a rivalry is exactly what the Champions Tour needs. And then, if David's Love would come out there and play some events yet, those three guys would really generate some interest in the Champions Tour and get that thing kicked off. Because, it's been struggling to find some guys to really grab the headlines. But Stricker and David Thoms and Davis Love could do that. And, of course, the Freddie Couples could never be healthy enough, which is probably isn't going to happen. But those are three guys. If they could come in and start winning majors and competing for tournaments every week, that would really generate a lot of interest in the Champions Tour, don't you think?
Oh, totally agree. And I think that add to that, that Colin Montgomery is still around. And he could be a dominant force here as well. So he's along those the time of game. So it could be really what they need. And they badly need it. They badly need that. I think that's – I have to agree with you. They need some rivalry like that. And the dominance of Bernhard Langer really hasn't helped the Champions Tour because everybody just expects him to go out and win every week, at least every year, take the title. So we'll see how it goes. Hey, to wrap up the weekend back, then let's talk about the European Tour, where Juus Luyten of the Netherlands won the inaugural NBO Oman Open by 2 shots from England's Chris Wood. It was Luyten's 6th European Tour title. He began the final day at the NBO Oman Open tied for the lead with Julien Guerrier of France and England's Matthew Southgate. Chris Wood was a shot back. Luyten started well and suddenly found himself 3 ahead after 4 holes. But Chris Wood applied some pressure with a birdie on the 6th, and after Luyten suffered consecutive 3 putts on the 7th and 8th holes, those two men were tied at the top of the board. Wood continued to press on in early part of the back nine. After getting up and down from Sand on the 12th, the Englishman took the lead, but Luyten struck back though, and he moved back in front for the birdie at the 16th. Wood dropped a shot at the 17th, and Luyten part of the last 2 holes, finishing 2 clear and claiming the victory. With the win, Luyten has moved to the top of the Race to Dubai standings, and he has earned a start on the WGC Mexico Championship. The Julien Guerrier from France finished in 3rd place with Jorge Campillo of Spain, Sung Soo Sen of the U.S., and Alexander Levy of France tied for 4th. Englishman Robert Locke and Paraguayan Fabricio Zanotti were tied for 7th with Scott Stephen Gallagher, Frenchman Benjamin Berg, and England's Matthew Southgate tied 9th. Southgate, he started the final round tied for the lead, but he fell away with 4 bogeys in the space of 5 holes in the front nine. In the end, he carded a 75. Other notable finishes, Andrew Beef Johnston, T12, Andy Sullivan and Eduardo Molinari, T16, Jordan Smith, T26, Thomas Bjorn, Thomas Dietrich, and Mateo Manacero, T31, Fongchai Jaidi, T51, Darren Clark and Paul Laurie, T61, and Fred American Chase Kopka was among the ones that missed the cut.
I think that wraps up the backspin, Carlos. So, you want me to move right on into the previews?
Sure, let's move on now. I thought you wanted to say anything on the European Tour. So, anyway, yes, that wraps it up. Okay, so let's move on now to the full call, the previews of this weekend's action. And, Fred, the PGA Tour is going to be at PGA National in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, with the Honda Classic, and I think you're going to say that this is the next tournament for a big cat, too? Or what's going to happen this week?
Yeah, he's going to play. He's going to try to play 2 weeks in a row. Well, actually, he 2 rounds, and if he plays 2 rounds, it's really just like playing 1 week. But you got to practice in between, so he'd be practicing anyhow, I guess. The PGA Tour heads across the country to Palm Beach for the Honda Classic. This used to kind of herald the beginning of the Florida swing, which has been reduced to
basically just the Honda Classic, the Valspar, and the Arnold Palmer Invitational, the pros would begin to get serious about their preparation for the Masters, now just a little over 1 month away. However, with the WGC move from Doral to Mexico, the Florida swing gets broken up. Ricky Fowler is looking to defend, and Tiger Woods is playing 2 weeks in a row for the first time in a long time. PGA National is a home game for a lot of the tour pros. They call Southeast Florida home. Justin Thomas, Ricky, and Rory are just a few of the guys that essentially have a home game this week. CBS moves their attention to college basketball, and NBC Golf Channel pick up the coverage this week. So, Carlos, you can see it all between those two networks. I can't wait to see Tiger. I really am curious to see if Tiger can kind of pull it together. I mean, you know, he's really at home this week. I look for him to make a cut. I look for him to play a lot better this week just for the fact that now he's getting some rounds under his belt. And I really do look for him. Maybe not a top 25, but, you know, I think he could be – I think he'll make the cut. I think he'll be around for the weekend. What do you think?
I think so. I think Genesis, the Genesis Open, he has never played well at the And he didn't even look comfortable playing, really, there. I just didn't see the same guy that we saw a couple of weeks ago before. So, like you say, he's more comfortable playing there at PGA National. He knows it better. And the champion course is just suits his abilities. I think he's going to do well. I don't think he's going to be a top 10, but I truly think he's going to be top 25. I truly think. But we'll see. We'll see. It's going to be a very interesting tournament. Hey, let's talk about the European Tour, the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters. It's going to be played at the Doha Golf Club in Doha, Qatar. That's a course that is 7,400 yards long, fireplace at par 72. The purse is going to be $1.75 million. Jung Won Won is the defending champion. Chris Wood moved back into the top 100 with his runner-up, finishing Oman last week after making his Ryder Cup debut at Hazel team. Englishman has only three top 10s in 29 starts. He will try to better that this week again, try to get some more momentum and maybe making the Ryder Cup again. With his victory last week, Loikin moving to number 9 in the race to Dubai and qualified for the WGC Championship in Mexico next week. Julian Suri of Jacksonville, Florida, is in the field after getting 3 sponsor exemptions on the PGA Tour. If you might remember Julian Suri last year, he earned his automatic promotion from the Challenge Tour to the European Tour, so he has a card there. He tied for 63rd at Torrey Pines, missed the cut in Phoenix after sailing 6 and 78 on the weekend at Pebble Beach to fall into a tie for 68. He fell 3 spots in the world ranking number 65 after those 3 weeks, so he really wants to get back on the top 50. And for the second straight week on the European Tour, no one from the top 50 is playing. I mean, that's incredible. But if you want to watch this tournament, Thursday and Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. on Golf Channel, Saturday and Sunday is going to be from 4 to 8:30 a.m. also on the Golf Channel.
Did you say nobody in the top 50 is at the in Qatar? Did you say that?
That is correct. Nobody. And this is the second week in a row that on the European Tour, and especially there playing in the Middle East, tournament, and it has usually attract big names. No one in the top 50.
Wow.
For the second straight week on the European Tour.
Well, I mean, I kind of understand this week because the top 50, they're all getting ready for the WGC Mexico next week. So, you know, with the time lag and that kind of thing, I kind of understand that. But you think last week, somebody, of course, you know, all the big names, Rory, and a lot of the big names are over here playing over here right now. So, Carlos, we had the Honda Classic going on, and we also have the Honda LPGA Thailand going on. And there's a really high-quality field on the Siam Country Club in Thailand this week, as the top 6 players in the world are all part of the 70-player field. for the Honda LPGA Thailand. Chan Chan Fang is number one for the 15th consecutive week. Sunyoung Park, So Young Yu, Lexi Thompson, Anna Nordqvist, and Inji Chun are close in pursuit. 17 of the top 20 in the world are in the field. Since it is a limited field event, there are just two rookies set to complete. Yin Young Ko, who you mentioned, who won last week, is in the field. And also Georgia Hall, really are the only two rookies in the field. Brittany Lynchicum, who won the first event, is also in the field. So both winners this season will compete. There are six Thai women in the field. Of course, the two Jutanagarn sisters, who are obviously the main draw. But don't forget Porn Anong Fatlam, who is a top 100 player in the world, and Benyapa Nipa Sofon. I hope that's right. Finished first on the Sumatra Tour's money list last year. But, Carlos, you're going to have to get up in the middle of the night, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., to see the live action on the Golf Channel, or you can set that DVR. Better yet, catch the replay the next morning, Carlos.
DVR, yes. That's what I'm going to do. Hey, the counterpart on the other side of the pond for the LPGA is the Ladies European Tour. And the third event of this year, this week, is set to showcase the world-renowned Palmville Golf Resort set on the beautiful coast of New South Wales and has been voted Australia's favorite golf course in Golf Australia's 50 Favorite Golf Courses poll, as well as Australia's most beautiful mainland golf course 16 years in a row by Golf Course Guide. So they're going to have a thrill there. It is a long course. By the standards for women, it's going to be 6,800 yards, 6,880 yards in place of the 72. And first money is $350,000. The order of merit leader is Georgia Hall. And this tournament is a co-sanctioned with the Australian Ladies Professional Golf Tour. This is going to be held for the first time this week. And so this is a new tournament for the Ladies European Tour. A field of 144 professionals will include Australia's rising star, Hannah Green. I expect her to do very well here. She just finished third at the ISBS Honda Women's Australian Open on Sunday, and she finished the 11th in the Bahamas. She's playing really, really good, as well as some of her home hopes like Rebecca Artois and Sarah Kim, among others. The international contingent includes Christina Kim of the U.S., China's Si Yun Lin, Sweden's Caroline Hedwall and Jenny Hackland, and Britain's Laura Davis, and Tina Parker, Holly Clive, and Michelle Thompson. So again, this is a picturesque course that will host a professional golf tournament for the first time. Could be well career-defining location for one of the brightest young stars there on the left, or a moment for a legend of the game. Laura Davis, to become one of his greats once again. Fred, yeah, Australian Ladies Classic on Bill is the fourth of a 5-week-long Australian swing that precedes the Women's New South Wales Open at nearby Coffs Harbour Golf Club that will be played in 2 weeks, March 1st to the 4th. And with that, we wrap up the quick previews. Fred, you have some words for us from Boyne Resort.
Absolutely, Carlos. Boyne Resort in northern Michigan features 10 golf courses at 3 different locations around Petoskey, Michigan. What other golf resort can you visit and have the option of playing 10 very different golf courses? The Highlands Mountain and Bay Harbor Clubs are all within a short driving distance of each other. Stay in one location, add rounds at the other locations to round out your trip. Whatever courses you play, do not miss a chance to play at the Bay Harbor Club with its gorgeous views of Little Traverse Bay. If you want 5-star accommodation, stay at the highly acclaimed Bay Harbor Inn and enjoy treatment normally reserved for royalty. Even though it's winter, now is the perfect time to take advantage of their early discounts and book your summer golf trip to northern Michigan. Call 888-407-0260, that's 888-407-0260, or visit boyne.com/golf.
to schedule your next golf adventure to Northern Michigan, Carlos.
And with that, now we move on to the Par 5 news. And Fred, why? Why not? I mean, let's go. Tiger Woods.
It's all Tiger. It's all Tiger all the time.
All Tiger. All the time. So tell us what happened. What's new with Tiger now this week?
Well, besides missing the cut and going home early, I wonder how Justin Thomas got home. You know, he flew out, from South Florida. He flew in the jet with Tiger over to L.A., and, Justin made the cut, stuck around. Tiger obviously went home. Unless Tiger stayed in his house out there in L.A., I think he's got a home out there, right? So maybe he stuck around out there and then brought Justin back. I don't know. But evidently, you just wonder about these guys. I don't know if anybody else wondered, but, it bothers me. Evidently, absence does make the heart grow fonder. Tiger used to treat being involved with the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup like a trip to the dentist for a root canal. But since he's not been able to play and has filled an assistant captain's role in the last few international team events, he wants to continue in that role, even if he makes the team on his own merit. He's confident his back problems are now behind him, and he's asked U.S. team captain Jim Furyk if he can be both a player and an assistant captain at this year's Ryder Cup match in Paris. No one has filled a dual role in modern Ryder Cup history, but then Tiger Woods is just not no one. He is accustomed to discovering new territories and setting new boundaries. Since returning to the tour this time, we seem to be seeing a kinder, gentler Tiger Woods. Maybe with age comes the wisdom that time is indeed fleeting, and the things that he once took for granted, like a supremely healthy body and the ability to beat every contender on the golf course, may be coming to an end, and he wants to experience every minute of the competition he can. Woods was presented with the scenario of a good rather than great summer that maybe left him around 20th in the U.S. points list, and asked if he would rather be an assistant captain or a captain's pick in the media room last week. He confounded the reporters with a smile and said, "What's wrong with both? I'd like to do both." And then he went on to confirm that both he and Furyk have spoken about the possibility, although Wood stopped short of revealing the skipper's response. Carlos, I'm sure Furyk will be glad to have Tiger Woods as a player, assistant captain, or anything else he wants to be in Paris for the Ryder Cup. They're good buddies, he would love to have him around. So everyone seems to be thinking, with the dearth of young talent now on the PGA Tour, Paris is going to be a cakewalk. But don't forget, Europe has some pretty good young players themselves. And if Darren Clarke hadn't been so stubborn and picked the right guys a couple years ago, Europe would have won at Hazeltine last time also. So stay tuned, kiddies. There's a lot more Ryder Cup talk to come as we progress through the summer, Carlos.
Oh, man, that'll be fun to see. I still see a lot of players vying for that spot. And I think that Tiger definitely, Jim Furyk would like him to be a player, but not a captain's pick. He wants to see Tiger Woods playing at his best so that he can just win outright the right to be there. So I know that there's going to be a lot of scrutiny if he just picks him up as a captain's pick. He better win it outright. Otherwise, it's going to be a doozy one. But anyway, that's something that we're going to talk about every week.
Yes. Hey, Carl. Yes. Hey, yes. To continue on with that, I just as you were talking, it just hit me. If Tiger is in the top 15, okay, he's just, a couple off of the top 12. Stricker's probably going to have to pick him. He might even have to pick him if he's in the top 20. The PGA is going to be whispering in his ear. They're going to want the TV ratings. They're going to want Tiger involved as a player if at all possible. And they would never admit to this, but that is a fact, okay? Because after all, this is made for TV. This is for fun, okay? But now, on the serious side of this, It's the same situation Darren Clark was in, picking his old buddies and not picking the good young guys that he should have been picking and comes over here and lose. You know, if Stricker is stuck picking maybe Tiger and Tiger's not still back to his best, I mean, we're talking a long ways away now. We're talking September, so we're talking a good 6 months from now. Tiger may be back on top of the world by then. He may have won two or three tournaments by then. Who knows? But, you know, if he's just playing along and just missing cuts and, you know, finishing way down the field, but he's worked himself back into the, you know, back into the FedEx Cup thing a little bit, I think Stricker's going to be forced to pick him, and that could maybe affect how the results are done at the Ryder Cup.
Just remember one thing, it's Jim Furyk, the captain. Stricker is the vice captain there. So
I'm sorry, I said that. Pardon me.
Yes. No, but definitely.
I misspoke.
I agree. I think that Tiger, the thing is that it's gonna create such a, well, that's what we want. That's what we want to talk about. Should he have picked Tiger or not? But I believe that if Tiger has worked himself to be in the top 15, he's going to be picked. I mean, that means that
he will be picked
on his way back up. So he has done his job to, so he has less than a year to get to the top 15. That's that's no easy feat. He's got to start getting top 10s, top 5s, and maybe wins to get there. So there's a lot of work for Tiger Woods to get straight up into the top 15, even the top 20, I would say. So we'll see. But that's what we want. We want to talk about whether he should have been picked or not. And like you said, there's a long way to go. Hey, Jeff Shackelford, he reports that John Poyet with the exclusive Augusta Chronicle details on plans filed by Augusta National to realign the old Berksman's Road to extend the fifth hole by a significant yardage. There it goes again. They keep expanding. Just shorten the ball. Oh, wait, you're going to talk about that later. But anyway, the plan submitted does not appear to significantly change the angle of the tee shot, though the original bunkering has been pushed down the fairway. I mean, if you see the photos that the photos that they put there, there's going to be that facelift on the fifth. It says that the plans show the tee box will be pushed back an estimated 20 to 30 yards, and Old Berksman's Road will be rerouted around the tee box. That, I mean, if you see that shot there, it's going to be really interesting how they're going to do that. Those plans show the tee box will be that pushed back there, and it's interesting to see 20 to 30 yards are going to be added. And from Boyette's story, according to the preliminary plans filed by Augusta firm Cranston Engineering Group PC, a total of 23.1 acres would be affected. The approximate start date would be May 1st, which comes after this year's Masters, and the approximate end date is November 1st. Masters week begins April 2nd of this year with tournament play from April 5 to the 8th. Work is also scheduled to begin this spring at neighboring Augusta Country Club with changes to its 8th and 9th holes, the two holes affected when Augusta National purchased land from the Country Club last year. Work at the Augusta Country Club, according to plans filed February 9, is expected to begin in May 9, and then by November. From the purely Jones McKenzie point of view, it'll be interesting to see if the fairway bunkers and slopes require recontouring to retain the original dynamics intended to reflect some of the old course strategies. Fred, this is by all means, they keep lengthening the course. But I don't know. To me, after seeing what it looks like, it's going to be a challenge because those bunkers are going to be right in the middle. You're going to either have to lay low be before them, or you really are going to have to be pinpointing to be on the fairway, thin fairway, to the right side of those bunkers. Right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's always tough. But, I mean, they're always tinkering with Augusta National. So, you know, it seems like every couple of years they're coming up with something different. It's a fluid situation there. And with Fred Ridley in charge, he's not going to stray too far from, you know, what Bobby Jones and Cliff Roberts, what they envisioned, and Alistair McKenzie for the golf course. So, you know, with the way things are today, they got to keep changing. They got to keep doing stuff. So, but yeah, it is pretty cool. They just moved the road. Yeah, well, we're just going to move the road here, guys. Pardon me. Here, let's just put a curve in around this tee here. We're going to stick a tee in there. Sorry. We don't need this road. So,
yeah.
Hey, Carlos, Bill Haas was in a serious car accident in Los Angeles last week, had to withdraw from the Genesis Open. One guy even died. That man was 71-year-old Mark Jabello, a successful businessman in Pacific Palisades, California, and who was hosting Haas last week at his house. Jabello was driving a Ferrari at high speed. He sideswiped a Toyota SUV that was driven by the actor Luke Wilson and crashed into a BMW, you know, only in like Bel Air or Pacific Palisades, you know. Well, he's driving a Ferrari and he hit a, you know, an SUV and then he bounced off a BMW and, you know, I'm surprised there wasn't a Bentley or a Porsche involved yet. But anyhow, he crashed into a BMW, and the car flipped over, killing the driver. Haas was slightly injured. He did go to the hospital, but the Haas management team released a statement. Bill Haas was involved in a serious car accident in which the driver, a member of the family with whom Haas and his family were staying for the Genesis Open, was killed. While Bill escaped serious injuries and has been released from the hospital, he is understandably shaken up, and more importantly, his deepest condolences go out to the host family during this tragic and difficult time. According to the Golf Channel, Jabello was a family friend of Billy Harmon's, who is Haas's swing coach, and was instrumental in bringing the Walker Cup and U.S. Open to Los Angeles Country Club. As I said, Haas escaped without any major injuries, but he did withdraw from the tournament and flew home. When he's going to return to tour is anyone's guess. It could be a while. You know, there's got to be a lot of emotions, you know, if not injuries and soreness and who knows whatever else going on. So, you know, something like this can leave some deep emotional scars, Carlos. We hope Bill Haas recovers and is able to continue competing on the PGA Tour in the near future.
I think that is going to be the most that he's going to have to overcome because somebody died. And definitely knowing how Bill Haas is, that's going to affect him for a little while. I mean, physical injuries, they just heal. But when it's about your feelings and how things are going, Billy is going to be feeling this one for a little while. So hopefully he can recover quickly and come back to play the way that we know that he can play. Hey, Fred. This is a bit of continuation to previous reports we have made here, and that is that Howard Milstein and Immigrant Capital have announced the purchase of Golf Magazine and Golf.com from Meredith Corporation. Formerly owned by Time Inc., Golf Magazine and Golf.com were acquired by Meredith on January 31st of this year as part of its acquisition of Time Inc., which had been in the process of selling Golf Magazine brands. Golf Magazine and its brands are the premier destination for golf news, analysis, insight, and instruction across all platforms. The portfolio includes the venerated Golf Magazine and Golf.com digital properties. Howard Milstein said, and I quote, "Golf Magazine is the leading publication serving the golf market, and Golf.com is the top digital destination for all things golf. We look forward to continuing Golf Magazine's long history of editorial excellence, both in its print edition and through its website and other offerings," end of quote. You know, Golf Magazine of the Golf.com reached an audience of 6.5 million across its digital, print, and social platforms. They celebrated franchising tools, include golf top 100 courses, including the world and U.S. editions, golf top 100 courses you can play, golf's top 100 teachers in America, the Golf Fix Finder app, Golf Live, Tour Confidential, and Golf Films Productions. Golf Magazine is the definite editorial voice of the sport on and off the course, offering exclusive feature stories and insider details, innovative video productions, equipment analysis and instructional tools, and much more. Howard P. Milstein is the chairman and CEO of New York Private Bank and Trust and its operating bank, Immigrant. He's an investor, philanthropist, and entrepreneur. Immigrant is the largest privately held, family-owned, and operated bank in the U.S. Immigrant Capital is the private equity division of Immigrant, which provides long-term equity and related capital to establish business across a range of industries. And since 2007, Milstein has been a partner with legendary golfer Jack Nicklaus in the Nicklaus Companies. He also owns numerous all other golf-related investments, including Mira Golf and Golf Logics, the number one app for golf and global leader in GPS and club tracking technology. Fred, you talked last week that it has been announced that Jack Nicklaus is reducing his day-to-day role with Nicklaus Companies and that Howard Milstein will assume the role of executive chairman while Nicklaus will remain as co-chairman. Last Wednesday afternoon, Howard Milstein met his new staff who will be relocating to the Immigrant Bank building in New York, asked what their message to the golfing public should be, and Fred, he said he wants Golf Magazine on golf.com to be the go-to source for all their golfing needs, full stop.
You know, Carlos, with what Golf Channel is doing with Revolution, by buying Revolution Golf, Golf Now, they have golf advisors. They are a large multimedia, touching a lot of different bases, from giving lessons, covering travel, doing all that stuff. And so now you've got some pretty clear-cut rivals there with what Golf Channel has done. And now with what Golf.com and Golf Magazine is doing, so everybody else is kind of small potatoes compared to them right now. Then you throw into all that, you know, Comcast is the parent company of Golf Channel, and you've got a lot of concentration of the major news sources for golf. Pretty much in those two hands, Carlos. There was more chatter on the. You talked about the shorter ball earlier, and where you talked about lengthening the Augusta National, and we've been talking about the shorter ball for some time. And there was more chatter last week out at the Genesis Open. The RNA's Martin Slumbers was out there, and he met with the press. The question. Of course, came up about reducing the distance the golf ball travels, and he wouldn't say what the governing bodies are planning, but they are intent on reducing distance. He said there are a lot of options. There is a lot of work still to be done with a lot of people and engaging with not just the game, but the equipment manufacturers and all sorts of things. But that work we now feel needs to be done. So, there's a couple of important things in that statement. He said a lot in just a couple sentences there. First of all, that they've decided that this work now needs to be done. So they're going to reduce yardage of a golf ball, especially for the professional game, and that brings up this ugly word of bifurcation. And you know what? We're going to hear Jack Barrett talk in a little bit. And one of their biggest fundraisers of the year is playing on the PGA National, the Champions Course, on Monday, the day after the tournament ends. And so the guys get to play. They pay a big chunk of money to play at exactly the same course that the pros play. We talked about that. But they're going to take that away because these guys are going to be using a shorter golf ball. So anyhow, he in that statement, he also says equipment manufacturers and all sorts of things that work needs to be done. I'm sure those contacts are being made and discussions are being conducted how and when to spring the shorter golf ball on approach. At the pace this thing's going, Carlos, it looks to me like 2020, you're going to see a shorter golf ball in use on the major golf tours around the world. However, and then we just look back last week, okay? The short par 4, number 10 at Riviera, played very difficult. Even Bubba said in his press conference after his win that he considers a 5 his personal par for that hole, even though it's only 300 yards long, a mere 3 wood for most tour pros. The 10th hole yielded almost as many bogeys, 86, as birdies, 87 for the week, with a 4.053 stroke average. That ranks it as the 94th toughest par 4 on tour this season, behind large, long holes like the 480-yard first at Wailea and the 549-yard 17th at Kapalua. So, and then, you know, while you were talking about lengthening the fifth, I was thinking about, you know, number 3. Number 3, I think, plays at Augusta National. I think it plays 315 yards. But there just is not a good way to play that hole. I don't care how you play it. You can lay over to the left, short. You can try and drive it. I don't care. If you both of your shots are not on target, you're going to make bogey on that hole. I'm telling you, it's one of the coolest holes I've ever seen in my life, number 3. And number 10 at Riviera is not far behind. I've never had the pleasure of seeing it live like I have number 3. But you don't have to have these 77-hard-yard golf courses. I don't know why we're getting this. So they drive the ball 325 yards. Okay, I get it, but, man, I don't like it. So anyhow, Carlos, Martin Slumbers, chief executive of the RNA, pretty much came out and said the golf ball was going to be shorter.
Yeah, I agree with the whole number 3, that's Flowering Peach. There's a par 4, 350. And the interesting thing is that the small green, which is a slope from right to left, you cannot entirely see it from the fairway. You have to – there's no way you're going to get to the fairway to possibly see it. That's how difficult it would be to get a tee shot in there. So definitely it's a very challenging hole there at Augusta. Hey, Fred, with that, we wrap up our Par 5 news, and now I believe you have some words to us from French Lick.
If you have not visited the French Lick Resort in Southern Indiana, what have you been waiting for? The resort has two fantastic championship golf courses, the Donald Ross course, first opened for play in 1917. For Ross lovers, it's a classic Ross design, using the natural hills and contours to shape the course. Walter Hagen won the 1924 PGA Championship on the Ross course, and the Sumatra Tour annually hosts an event there. The Pete Dye course is atop the second highest peak in Indiana, and if the golf course isn't hard enough, the views of the surrounding countryside will certainly distract you. The course has also hosted several major events. The PGA of America held the 2010 PGA National Professional Championship on the course, plus it hosted the 2015 Senior PGA Championship and the first ever Women's Senior LPGA Championship for the Legends Tour. The West Baden Inn was once the eighth wonder of the world with a 200-foot domed atrium. It's still a wonder today. Do yourself a favor and visit FrenchLick.com to book your next golf trip today. French Lick needs to be added to your bucket list of golf destinations. I guarantee it will become one of your favorites, Carlos.
And with that, we wrap up our Par 5 news, and now we'll move into the practice range, where every week Fred and I pick a topic, and each one of us take our own shots at it. And this week, we're going to be talking about diversity initiatives, and that's going to be followed by our VIG, Jack Barrett, who's going to talk about the first tee in Florida. So let's talk first about what is the World Golf Foundation, which is supported by major international golf organizations and professional tours, oversees the World Golf Hall of Fame and Museum, the first tee, Golf 2020, and other nonprofit components, but the foundation has a dual mission. The first is to honor the history of golf and the achievements of its greatest individuals, both players and contributors to the game, and to create entertaining and educational exhibits for the enjoyment of the general public. Secondly, the foundation has undertaken several charitable initiatives, including the First Tee and Golf 2020. These elements of the foundation work together to promote the growth of the game of golf among adults, youth, and minorities, as well as in the golf industry. The foundation is supported by major golf organizations and professional tours throughout the world, 24 in all. And its CEO is Steve Mona, which we have had here 3 times on the show. Great guy, very knowledgeable, and really working with all the leaders of all the major organizations in the world of golf. So the first main initiative, let's talk about the World Golf Hall of Fame and Museum. It opened its museum facility in May 1998. It provides visitors an opportunity to learn about the rich history, values, and deeply rooted traditions of the game through exhibitry and the Walk of Champions. The World Golf Hall of Fame is housed there in the museum. It has an IMAX theater. It's about 75,000 square feet. 70 separate exhibits. The artifacts on display there are representative of the history of golf. Many of the artifacts are on loan to the foundation from various individuals and golf organizations for use during the museum. The second is Golf 2020, which is a collaborative effort among leading organizations to support ongoing growth of the game. They have various initiatives that focus on diversity, women, and sustainability, but they also have 2 big movements helping out, which is We Are Golf, a coalition of golf's leading organizations working together to communicate the game's economic, charitable, and environmental and fitness benefits to congressional leaders and the National Golf Day. And the third is the First Tee, which is a youth development organization that impacts the lives of young people by providing educational programs that build character, instill life-enhancing values, and promote healthy choices through the game of golf. It's supported also by golf's major organizations, has reached more than 9 million young people since its inception in 1997, and reaches youth on golf courses in schools and other youth serving locations. Their initial focus was on creating affordable access for those not previously exposed to the game of golf, but it since has broadened its focus development organization that teaches life skills using golf as a platform. The First Tee has 3 primary channels of delivering its programming. Number one, a network of approximately 180 chapters across the U.S. and in 4 international locations, that is in Vancouver, Ireland, Japan, and New Zealand. And the second one is the First Tee National School Program, which introduces golf to elementary age students through physical education classes, and finally an after-school program delivered by trained leaders at other youth service locations like YMCA Boys and Girls Clubs. So, Fred, with all that, I mean, diversity is very important to be inclusive here in the world of golf and the sport that we love if we want it to grow. So what is this new diversity initiative, and why is it important?
Well, you know, as we know, golf is often seen as an elitist sport that caters to older, more affluent white guys who sit around the tap room after the round and tell lewd stories. Well, golf is far from that. With the large broom of diversity that is sweeping across the country, more and more people are awakening to the fact that the country is made up of a virtual melting pot of cultures and ethnicities. Golf is a business. It needs to grow to survive and prosper. It needs to adequately reflect the strata of those various cultures on the golf course and in the golf clubs. Many of you are too young to remember, but golf clubs used to be separated by religion. There was the Jewish golf club, the predominantly Catholic club, and so on. Just within the past few years, we have seen
the last bastions of men-only golf clubs open their doors to accept women members. This open-door policy has been a fixture in golf for many years. Yes, it may not work as fast as everyone would like, but it does happen, even at Augusta National and Muirfield in Scotland. The mission of the World Golf Foundation is to unite the golf industry in support of initiatives that enhance the growth and provide access to the game of golf worldwide while preserving golf's traditional values and passing them on to others. In support of that mission, the World Golf Foundation has focused a variety of initiatives to grow and celebrate the game of golf around the world. And you mentioned those. They also celebrate golf's greatest players and contributors who serve as inspiration of golfers and fans worldwide. So, through 2020, Golf 2020, the collaborative effort among the leading golf organizations, they are helping to bring more people to the game. So, the mission is to unite and activate the golf industry around key strategic initiatives that increase participation and retention of participants, inspire involvement and interest in the game. Okay, so Carlos, let's boil this down. I'm gonna rattle some names off to you. Nacha, and I'm gonna slaughter these names, okay? But just bear with me. Nacha Dying Pim, Pim Shanak Kawil, Hannah Kokendorfer, Pinata Kuvanen, oh man, this is good. Thumpija Sukasern, Don Shanak Toburint, and Saralak Tumfall. Now, you'll never know what those names are. Those are the seven young women that make up the University of Toledo's women's golf team. Six of them are from Thailand. There's only one young lady, the Hannah Kokendorfer, who's from Michigan, up here in Lambertville, just across the line. But the rest of the young ladies are from Thailand. So we've got diversity right here in Toledo on the University of Toledo women's golf team. And a lot of the women came over here after they saw the success that another Thai lady, Satika Runyurong, had. She graduated a couple years ago and was all MAC for 4 years. She did really well. She qualified for some U.S. Women's Opens and was an outstanding player. And then Jack Barrett, when we hear the interview, he's going to talk about diversity and inclusion that is already happening on a daily basis in golf operations around the country, like his first tee program. You know, all this stuff that I read and all these initiatives and all this rhetoric, you know, these things sound nice when big organizations spout them off. But the reality, Carlos, is that grassroots golf needs women and juniors from every ethnic group to grow and survive. It's an economic and financial necessity. So it needs to happen, and they're working at the grassroots to make it happen. It's nice that, you know, that World Golf Foundation and the USGA recognize this and say a bunch of nice stuff, but in actuality, it's already taking place, Carlos.
Let's go now to our VIG before we continue so that he can give us a little bit more to go to right now. His name is Jack Barrett, who is the developmental director of the First Tee of Palm Beach. He's involved with the Honda Classic this week, but he took a few minutes to talk to us about diversity and inclusion in golf. He's explaining there how he's reaching out to bring more kids to golf, as well as kids with special needs from lower-income families. So, Fred, anything else you want to add before we bring in Jack?
No, I'm going to save my final comments for after that, Carlos.
Okay, let's do it.
We're happy to welcome Jack Barrett, who is the developmental director for the first tee of Palm Beaches, to Back Nine Report. Jack, I know you have a very busy week this week with the PGA Tour in town for the Honda Classic. Thanks for taking time to talk with us, and welcome to the Back Nine Report.
Thanks a lot, Fred. It's an honor to be on, and the Honda Classic week is our biggest event of the year, so we're looking forward to the wonderful mayhem that's coming.
What are a couple of the biggest events that you get involved in that are good fundraisers for the first tee down there?
Two major events that we have during the Honda week. The one is tomorrow, actually. Every Tuesday before the Honda, we have our PGA Tour Youth Clinic. Tomorrow we have Cameron Tringali and Ben Crane, who will be our pros tomorrow, and it should be a lot of fun with those two guys. And then the other event that we have is our Monday after the Honda, which is played on the Champions Course there at PGA National with the same pro set pins from Sunday. That's a huge, huge event for us, probably our biggest event of the year.
We were able to stop by the first tee of Palm Beach's facility last year, get a firsthand view of what you're doing down there in Southeast Florida. And Jack Nicklaus designed your practice facility. The entire property sits atop an old waste dump. Tell us just a little bit, how many kids are you servicing down there? And tell us a little bit about your facility and what your program is.
Basically, the first tee of the Palm Beaches, Fred, as I probably already mentioned to you when you were there during your visit, is really under the umbrella of the Children's Golf Foundation. So our mission with our foundation was originally to bring golf to all aspects of kids, mostly those that are special needs, which includes a ton of things, you know, obviously autism, whether they're wheelchair bound, physically handicapped, emotionally handicapped. And we've taken it a step further, and we've added the veterans program in conjunction with the PGA Hope and PGA of America. They used us as the beta launch, if you will, about 4 years ago before they went national with that program. And then we have the first tee programming, which really is the, I guess you could say, the foundation of all we do with the youth development, life skills program, and what we consider to be probably our largest youth development program in the county.
Both the World Golf Foundation, whose umbrella you're under, and the USGA have made announcements over the past couple of weeks about working to make golf more inclusive and diverse. The World Golf Foundation, through its 2020 program, has accepted this mission statement: to increase ethnic and gender diversity in the golf industry among recreational and competitive players and in the business of golf. So a couple of questions. What are you seeing in your first tee classes? Do you feel golf is reaching a diverse mix of various populations that comprise our population?
Yeah, absolutely, Fred. I'll tell you, in the last 2 or 3 years, we definitely noticed the increase. You know, one of the things that we're really proud of is that we just became what they call an ACE level chapter, and that is the highest level you can get within the first tee network. And the reason why we've attained that is because of the diversity, the inclusion, if you will, and the growth of participation in all of our programs. I mean, really the initiative for us and First Tee on a national level is to make golf more accessible and more affordable. And what we've seen is probably about 80% of our kids come from what we consider low-income areas, and they are now being exposed to golf through the First Tee program and also golf courses. As long as they're a first tee participant, they have full use of our facility and also neighboring golf courses, which partner with us to help get access for those kids. Most courses, as long as the kids are with a paying adult, the kids have no fees whatsoever. And then the other thing that we're really proud of is minorities that are involved. Obviously, that's increased. We have folks from Riviera Beach close by, which is a low-income area, with kids that are participating in programs with kids that come from the Bears Club, Lost Tree, Frenchman's Creek, and the other, you know, high-income areas. And they're playing side-by-side in our programs. And in addition to that, we also have a huge, huge young girls involved in our program. That population has exploded in the last 2 years. The national average for first tee chapters is around 30%. With girls' participation, we are around 45%. And that's because of inclusion through programs like LPGA Girls Golf and getting more LPGA professionals involved in our coaching and programming.
Really is a grassroots effort out there to reach out to more and more diverse base of kids
right.
coming into play. How do you reach out? How are you finding these kids to come in?
I'll tell you, Fred, finding kids is not the problem here in Palm Beach County. What we're doing is we're reaching out to program partners in the Palm Beach County area and also in the Four County area here and along the coast, Boys and Girls Clubs, YMCAs, Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Urban Impact. So we have a lot of different program partners that have an abundance of kids, and through those programs, we're bringing them to our facility. We will go to their facility if needed, if transportation is not available, but we try to encourage them to come to our facility so obviously they can use the wonderful facility greens, the driving range, putting greens, and then the long-term goal is to get them from our facility to a green grass golf course, which is nearby.
Once you get the kids in the program, what's your retention rate? Are you able to keep the kids involved and interested? What kind of numbers are you seeing from that?
Yeah, in this past year, in 2017, we had the highest retention, hence our highest rating or ranking, if you will, as a chapter, which was around 72%. And why we found that to be, you know, a big jump in retention is because of the quality coaching, and we're now the majority of our coaches are either PGA or LPGA professionals who are first-tee coach trained. So they're not only getting first-tee curriculum, core values, life skills, but they're getting real golf instruction, which helps with retention. And the biggest issue, which we're really starting to combat now, and a lot of youth development organizations are, is the retention of the teenagers. Once they get to be 13, 14 years old, obviously their thoughts, their desires, their friends, that all changes. And what we're trying to do is make that more interesting for that age group. And this past year, I was fortunate enough to be the coach of our first team STEM program, science, technology, engineering, and math, for that age group. And it was amazing how much of a turnout we had for that and the interest level.
Well, Jack, we certainly appreciate you taking time to come and talk to us. As always, Jack does a lot of fundraising down there because all of his programs are accessible. And if the child has a financial need, you really don't charge anything, right, Jack?
That is correct. I would say about 85% of our participants do not pay anything at all.
If you'd like to help support the First Tee down there, Jack, how can they find you? How can they send you some money?
Our website is www.thefirsttpalmbeaches.org. All information, all programming, all ways to help and get involved are listed there. We would love to have them check in on that website, and they can always reach out to me. My email and cell phone are on there.
Thanks again, Jack. Have a great week at the Honda Classic.
Yeah, thank you very much. Hopefully we get to see you soon. Thanks for your time, Fred.
There you have it. That was Jack Barrett, Developmental Director of the First Tee of Palm Beach. And Fred, what's your comments about that?
Well, I'm just going to kind of bleed in here to my final comment, Carlos, on this whole issue. But as you heard Jack tell us, the diversity and inclusion are already a daily part of what he's doing. They are working. He mentioned Riviera Beach, which is really contiguous there to Palm Beach, and it's one of the poorest areas you're going to find anywhere there at Riviera Beach, and a lot of his kids come out of there. So they're really doing a great job of not only bringing these kids and introducing them to the game, but creating an organization where they can do something to build confidence in themselves, and give them something to get them out of the doldrums and some of the issues that they might have at home. So I'm going to wrap this up, Carlos. You know, the World Golf Foundation has said their vision is to be a catalyst for making golf look like America, whatever that is. Well, their mission statement involves increasing ethnic and gender diversity in the golf industry among recreational and competitive players, as well as in the business of golf. And that all just sounds wonderful. It's great rhetoric. You know, they're paying somebody probably a couple hundred grand a year to write this stuff up, and it's great.
But as Jack told us, this is already happening. It's already a daily part of his golf operations, and it's just not him. It's everywhere. We can talk to Mark Croft out in Yuma, Arizona, or we can talk to Rich O'Brien in the Carolinas, or Ty Anderson. You can talk to any pro anywhere, and they're bringing kids in of all shapes, sizes, colors, and whatever to get them involved in golf. It's happening everywhere. So, they're already happening, Carlos. They've been happening for over 40 years. The country is constantly changing, and so is the golf industry. We really don't need the USGA and the World Golf Foundation to tell us that we need to diversify. It's already happening, Carlos. But it's nice that they maybe throw a few dollars down to the guys that are really doing the work.
Do you think that we are doing good with that model that they're doing at I mean, let's put it this way. I hear what you're saying, and it's great because I know that it's happening. But my point is, are we getting somewhere? I mean, is it really, are we making more players out of that with that initiative?
Yes.
On the grassroots? Are we really getting more players going out there?
Yes, it's just like kids starting, and then we didn't even touch base in this, Carlos, of the pros that are going into the schools. Pretty much every pro that I talk to has some kind of program going on with his local elementary schools or middle schools where he spends time every year, probably in the wintertime when he's not busy on the golf course, going into the school, and it becomes a phys ed session. He'll teach for maybe a couple weeks or a week during the year and introduce kids to golf using like the snag equipment or indoor, softballs and things he can use indoors. So just like here in Toledo, the first tee is announcing in Toledo tonight. They're announcing in Naples, Florida, that they're going to start turning ground for their new facility here. There's going to be a total academy. It's on 43 acres, and they're going to have a caddy training program, and they're going to have vocational training programs, and they're going to have after-school tutor programs to help kids with homework and stuff. So, it's amazing what these things are all doing and the money that's being raised and generated to do this stuff, Carlos. And I'm really impressed. Every time I go somewhere, the things that people are doing, and it's just not Ohio, it's just not Florida, it's everywhere. Every place you go, if you look, there are golf pros, PGA pros, or someone in the community working to bring kids and diverse minorities or different segments, women, whatever, into the game of golf. It happens over time. It's not something it's an overnight deal. It's been going on. I think it's gaining. I think it's like a snowball. I think it's getting more. It's getting bigger. And like I say, when organizations like the World Golf Foundation, USGA, make it a priority, it gets a lot of press. And if the PGA gets involved, it gets a lot of press and it gets people fired up. I talked to a guy over the weekend about getting the PGA Junior League going here in town. He's been doing it for a couple years now. It's been slowly growing. I've talked to other pros about what they're doing with that, and they're working to get that going in their areas. So that's like Little League, Carlos. It's like midget football. Kids play it, and so then later in life, they play baseball, or they play softball, or they watch football, they become fans. It's the same way. If they do it in school, if they do it in junior golf league, if they do it in the first tee, they become fans, so they're going to play golf later as they get older. It's happening. That's a long answer, I know, but it's a multifaceted problem and solution. It's just not one thing here. It's just a little bit everywhere.
I think that they are very, very needed. I don't think that we can discard what the World Golf Foundation, the USGA, and all those organizations are doing, because those are the ones with the deep pockets and the ones that we need to get the word out. As long as the word gets out, which is what the grassroots move cannot do, I think that is a complement. It's a part, like you say, it's a lot of moving parts that need to work for the sport of golf to really become more inclusive and get the word, the real word out of what it is. You and I know about this people and the PGA pros and the grassroots movement that is going, but the everyday person doesn't know it. And that's where we need those like the Golf 2020 with the We Are Golf that goes here to the congressman and try to gain some traction for initiatives to make it more inclusive, more the diverse with the women, the lower income people. So in my opinion, yes, I think it's going to take an effort from all parts. On the high level, from the World Golf Foundation and all those organizations that they work with, and of course the ones that do the dirty job, which is the PGA pros and us going out and getting the word out and getting people to come play to see if we can grow and take golf to where it should be at a prominent place in the world of sports. And with that, we'll wrap up.
Carlos, just one real comment real quick. So in my lifetime, so when my kids were growing up, there were, a couple of junior golf leagues. When the older boys played, there was really only a couple. Seven or 8 years later, when my youngest boy was playing, there was about five or six within a driving distance that he could play in tournaments. And, you know, our local golf club had a one-week clinic where, the local pro taught them a little bit about chipping and putting and took them to the range a little bit and let them play a few holes and made sure they had a Pepsi and a hot dog. It has come a long ways from then. What we're doing today, what these guys are doing today, is so far removed and so much better than what that was 20 years ago. It's unbelievable. I know the PGA is promoting it. I know the USGA is working on it. I know the World Golf Foundation. But at the grassroots, these guys are really doing a great job of introducing the game to women, juniors, and diverse groups, Carlos.
Well, with that, we'll wrap up our practice range and now move on to our closing segment, which is the final putts. And I'm going to start, as usual, with my first two. The PGA Tour announced on Friday that Jordan Spieth, and, you know, this was funny as I was reading this, how much it really assimilates the real politics that go around. And listen to this. I mean, Jordan Spieth has been elected chairman of the Player Advisory Council. That's the PAC. Wow, that brings some memories. By the tour's membership for the 2018 calendar year, voting ended on Tuesday, February 13th. The 16-member PAC advises, I wonder if there's a super PAC, and consults with the PGA Tour Policy Board, the Board of Directors, and Commissioner Jay Monahan on issues affecting the tour. Spieth, who prevailed over Billy Hurley III for PAC chairman, will succeed Davis Love III, who served from 2016 to this year on the PGA Tour Policy Board next year. He will serve a three-year term from 2019 to 2021 as player director, along with Charlie Hoffman, who started on 2017 and will finish in 2019, Kevin Streelman, also in that same period, and Johnson Wagner, who starts this year and finishes in 2020. Fred, if evidently the usual political tactics of running negative campaign ads by that Billy Hurley was promoting didn't keep Jordan Spieth from being elected chairman of the PGA Tour Advisory Council, maybe he had too many fake news going there. But he will still be part of the council, but I wonder how good the chemistry will be with his new boss. And finally, it appears that Rory McIlroy will not be the only name missing from the WGC Mexico Championship next month. I mean, according to the AAP report, Jason Day plans to join McIlroy in skipping the no-cut event March 1st in order to stay home in Ohio with his mother, who last year underwent surgery to treat lung cancer. Day is coming off a strong start to the year that included a playoff victory at Torrey Pines and a runner-up finish last Sunday at Pebble Beach, but his decision to skip the next WGC event means that his pre-master schedules would only include two more starts, which is the Arnold Palmer Invitational and the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play, which he won in consecutive weeks in 2016. And there still may be another star missing from the field as Jordan Spieth remains unsure about his upcoming schedule and would not commit to playing in Mexico when he was asked about his plans for the following for the event following his final round at Pebble Beach 2 weeks ago. This will be the second year tournament will be held at the Club Golf Chapultepec in Mexico following the PGA's Tour's decision to move the event from its longtime spot at Trump National Doral outside Miami, showing the importance of the WGC Mexico. Both Rory and Jason Day say they will skip the no-cut Big Purse Invitational. Jordan will see if he feels good enough to play. Fred, I mean, not trying to stir up any controversy here. I mean, far from that. But big stars like this missing a WGC event, which serves as a prep for the Masters. I mean, that didn't happen before. I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah, they would have played probably if it would have been at Doral. You know what? And if I'm their manager, I'm going to tell them to skip it because there's so much golf coming up, and their priority is on winning majors, so they can get enough reps in, in Florida. And Jordan's going to play in Texas, so he's got to play there, so he could skip Mexico easy enough. But Carlos, you did say one thing. Where did you say Jason Day was going to go home to? Where was that?
Somewhere in Ohio. Somewhere. I don't
Ohio.
Know.
Yeah, Ohio. The center of the golf universe. That's right. And also, I just want to mention, the video campaign that Billy Hurley, that was hilarious. That was really well done. He did a great job putting that together. I watched that a couple times, actually, because there was so much in there. He didn't miss a trick. It was really good stuff. Hey, Dustin Johnson reached the distinction of holding the number one spot on the official world golf ranking for the 52nd consecutive week. He's just the fifth player to do that, joining Greg Norman, Nick Faldo, Tiger Woods, and Rory, holding the number one spot for 52 for a full year. DJ has a ways to go to catch Greg Norman, who was number one for a total of 331 weeks, although albeit it was several times. And Tiger, who was number one for a total of 623 weeks. There's a number you should burn in your skull, just like Cal Ripken's consecutive games and 61 home runs and, whatever, all those, Pete Rose's number of hits. 281 weeks consecutive, Tiger was number one. By the way, that's a record that will probably never be broken. 281 weeks is 5.4 years, if you're wondering. And 623 weeks is just 1 week shy of a full 12 years. So Tiger was number one for a long time. DJ said he turned down an invitation to play in the celebrity basketball game during the Genesis Open that Bubba played on. I think that was probably a smart move. What could go wrong with that? Fall and hurt your back again? Yeah, good thing he didn't play. Lydia Ko, a good friend of the Back Nine Report, Steve Eubanks, has a very good article about Lydia and her family and her penchant for changing caddies and coaches in this week's Global Golf Post. I don't know if you saw it or not, Carlos, but there's a guy up at the Minnesota Golf Show that made a 100-foot putt. Every year, the Minnesota Golf Show offers a grand prize for any attendee that could make this 100-foot putt. For the last 28 years, no one has ever made it. 28 years. Can you imagine how many thousands of people have tried that thing? Sunday, 49-year-old Paul Schadel holed the putt. Went home with a pocket full of cash. He won $100,000. The video of the historic putt is available on PGA.com. Also, another video that you may want to watch is Sophie Gustafson was a standout performer on the Ladies European Tour. She won 16 LET titles and added 5 more wins on the LPGA Tour. One of those wins was the 2000 Women's British Open. Of late, she has been caddy and coach for Beth Allen, and Beth has credited Sophie with being an immense help in her improvement over the past few years. For her entire life, Sophie struggled with a severe stuttering speech problem, would not do personal appearances or accept awards in person. She would send a taped video instead. She admitted one such six-minute video took her 8 hours to complete. She prepared a short video and posted it to her Facebook page the other day, and I would urge everyone to check it out. It's Sophie Gustafson, G-U-S-T-A-F-S-O-N. She has been working with the staff at Tony Robbins, and they have been able to use meditation and breathing techniques to cure her speech problems. If you know someone that struggles with stuttering or other speech issues, go to Sophie's Facebook page and give this video a look. And maybe Tim Robbins has something that will work for your friend or whoever needs it. But everyone that knows Sophie Gustafson, this is like a miracle for her to be able to talk and do the things she's doing. Because she's like 44 years old, and she struggled with this whole life, and it's been an issue. So, Carlos, that's all I have for Tuesday, February the 20th, 2018.
With that, we wrap up another week of the Backnine Report. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Jack Barrett, who is the developmental director of the First Tee of Palm Beach. Don't forget to join us and again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Block Talk Radio. Or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or TuneIn. Also, you can watch on Roku TV. And if you haven't done so, follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres. Along with Fred Alvader, we wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
What a matchup!
And what a team, Mike. Metro PCS and the iPhone SE for $0 on a network that covers 99% of people in the U.S. Oh, impressive.
Play with the best. Switch to Metro PCS on an unlimited LTE plan and get a 32-gig iPhone SE for $0. Metro PCS. Coverage not available in some areas, plus sales tax. Claim based on talk and text. Not valid for active numbers currently on the T-Mobile network or active on Metro PCS in the past 90 days. See store for details and terms and conditions.